So I want to begin my homily this afternoon by talking about two things. I want to talk about karma, and then I want to talk about grace. Karma. It's the central tenet of Eastern religions, especially Hinduism, Buddhism, Jainism, Sikhism, and Taoism. The second, the religion of grace, is the central tenet of the Abrahamic religions, Judaism, and Christianity. The religion of karma, the religion of grace. Now, karma has a lot to recommend to it. It explains a lot, and it has stood the test of many centuries. A karma approach says that by a cosmic spiritual law, we are punished or awarded according to moral activity. Therefore, good intent and good deeds contribute to good karma and future happiness, whereas bad intent and bad deeds contribute to bad karma and future suffering. This suffering will happen either in this life or in a life that is to come. Either we will come to that point where we will reach nirvana, or we will be reincarnated and come back into this world depending on good karma or bad karma. Now, karma is not like the law of gravity. Its results are not immediate. They are delayed. Nevertheless, in the long run, people will be rewarded or punished according to their merit. Now, this does have a lot that is sort of satisfying for us. It appeals to our sense of fairness and justice. And that's why the religion of karma is very popular. The religion of karma focuses on our work. What about the religion of grace? Well, the word grace means gift. And repeatedly in the Bible, it's associated with the theological virtue that we call faith. And so grace and faith are very closely associated. For instance, listen to this verse, Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8, where St. Paul says, "For by grace you have been saved through faith. And this is not your own doing, it is the gift of God." St. Paul says that what saves us is not karma, but the grace of God, which we appropriate, that is, we bring it into our lives by faith. And Paul could not be clearer. This is not our own doing. This is God's gift. This is something that God gives. And so here's the key difference. A religion of karma focuses on the human act. The religion of grace focuses on the divine act. And that's what's primary. Now, with this in mind, listen to the very last verse from today's reading from Romans chapter 11. This is how our reading ended this evening. "For God has imprisoned all in disobedience so that he may be merciful to all." Everyone's been imprisoned. Get the picture that everyone's in jail. But then God is the merciful jailer who comes by with the key and he opens the prison door so that everyone has the opportunity to get out. And what Paul is doing here is he's come to the 11th chapter of Romans. Romans has 16 chapters. Chapters 1 to 11 are the first part of the letter. And what Paul is doing in the first 11 chapters of Romans is kind of developing what he said in Ephesians, that God is a God who works by grace, and the fulfillment of his grace is shown to us in the person of Jesus Christ. And so here's the thing that we have to sort of think about. If it was based from what Paul would say on karma, we all have bad karma. We are all imprisoned. We are not going to be able to get out. So that's why we need to rely and call upon the mercy of God. And so that Paul wants to make it absolutely clear, we are all in the same boat, whether we're Jew or Gentile. And for Paul, that means everybody. In the verses immediately before the last verse of this evening's reading, listen to what he said. "Just as you were once disobedient to God," he's now talking to Gentiles. "You Gentiles, you were disobedient to God, okay? But now you have received mercy. And now because of the Jewish people's disobedience, they are disobedient now, so that they will eventually receive mercy. And so Paul just has in mind this image, this picture, that God is a God who wants to bestow mercy on everyone. Paul understands that salvation, that is to restore what was God's original intention for us, and what was God's original intention, that we would bear his image, is something that happens when by faith we respond to God. By faith we say, oh yeah, that which is most important is not my action, but God's action. And that is at the heart of what Romans is all about. Now, Romans chapter 1, verses 16 and 17. It's the key part of this letter. I would recommend, maybe this week, read through the book of Romans. 2 chapters a day, you'll get through it in 7 days. Well, not quite. You'll need another day, a week Monday. But read 2 chapters of Romans a day. A week from Monday, you'll be in chapter 16. It will be worth your time. This is a wonderful letter. And here in chapter 1, he outlines for us the theme of the whole letter. Listen carefully. He'll use the word faith, not once, not twice, not 3 times, but 4 times in 2 verses. 4 times in 2 verses, he uses the word faith. Listen to what Paul writes. I am not ashamed of the gospel. It is the power of God for salvation to everyone who has faith. To the Jew first, and also to the Greek. In other words, for all people, is what he's getting at there. For in it, the righteousness of God is revealed through faith, for faith, as it is written, the one who is righteous will live by faith. It's a bit of a tongue twister. Say that 4 times fast. It might be hard to get through it. But here's what Paul is getting at. It is through faith, that is, through the witness of those who wrote the Hebrew Bible, that we know that God is the God of grace. And through faith, we read the character of God, and so then it is by faith that we come to accept this gospel that Paul says, I am not ashamed of, because it is the gospel of the grace of God. And what Paul would have us understand is the following, that as we live in this world, it is as we see what God has revealed that we understand, oh, it's not primarily karma, it's primarily grace. But here's the point. From a human perspective, karma makes more sense. From a human perspective, it makes more sense to say, if you're good, good's going to happen. If you're bad, bad's going to happen. But we know the world doesn't work like that. There are lots of times bad people seem to get away with all sorts of things that seem to be good, and good people experience all sorts of stuff that's really bad. And that's why we need grace. And that's why Paul concludes that passage by saying in chapter 1, the one who is righteous will live by faith. That is, as we grow in trusting God, then we will grow in being a righteous people. So here's the beautiful thing about Romans 1 to 11. It's all about the grace that God shows us in Jesus, this gift of his love. Chapters 12 to 15, it's all about how we now live in response to grace. So works, says St. Paul, really matter. But we don't start there. They are the outgrowth of faith. So remember that passage in Ephesians where he talked about grace being the gift of God? Well, he then goes on to say this. For we are what he made us, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand to be our way of life. We are to exhibit good works as Christian people, absolutely. But think about it this way. Faith is to a raspberry bush what the root system is. If there are no roots, you are not going to have any stem. If you don't have a stem, you are not going to have any fruit. But if you have a healthy root system, the stems are going to be healthy, and you're going to have big, fat, plump raspberries that you can put thick cream and sugar on, and you're going to enjoy those. And here's the thing. That's what faith is. Faith is the root system. And as we have strong faith, that is, not faith in ourselves, but faith in the mercy and the goodness of God, then those roots are strong so that we have a stem that allows for the fruit of love to be embodied in our lives. So here's the thing I want to conclude by talking about faith, and it's this. There are two aspects of faith. There is, first of all, the act of faith, and then there is the object of faith. The act of faith is what we do. The object of our faith is Jesus Christ. And that's what today's weird gospel is all about. Okay, this is one of the weirdest passages in the whole of the gospel writings. Like, what is Jesus doing here? This doesn't seem like the Jesus of mercy and grace. He seems to be giving this woman, whose daughter is in very dire straits, an incredibly hard time. So why is it that he says, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel? So here's the first thing we need to remember. Oh, this is the gospel of Matthew. Matthew is the most Jewish of the four gospels. This is the first time in Matthew's gospel that Jesus has gone out of Israel. He's now in Gentile territory. And so he's kind of playing, I think, with this woman, and even playing with the apostles, by saying, I was sent to the lost house of the sheep of Israel because they've lost their way. I have to bring them back to the center of grace. But the woman is not so concerned about theological realities at this point. She says, Lord, help me. And then Jesus says what I think sounds like a real insult. It's not fair to take the children's food and give it to the dogs. Imagine if you had the Lord say to you, you dog. I don't think you would appreciate that too much, but this is the way in which the Jews talked about Gentiles. They referred to them as dogs. And we're not talking about my little Bichon Frise that it's at home. We're talking about like a coyote or a wild dog. But then listen to the woman's response. She has guts. She doesn't say, okay, Jesus, I guess you're right, and walk away. She says, yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table. In other words, she's saying, I get this, Jesus, but there's enough grace to go around. There's enough grace that even those crumbs that fall off of the table that is set for the people of Israel, we Gentiles can eat up the leftovers. But what I know, Jesus, is I need you. I need you to be at the center of my life. And then Jesus says, woman, great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish. And then we're told at that moment, the woman's daughter was healed instantly. Here's the interesting thing in Matthew's gospel. There are two miracles that involve Gentiles, non-Jews. This is the first one. The second one is the centurion whose servant is sick. And remember, he says to Jesus, Lord, I'm not worthy to have you come under my roof. Only say the word and my servant will be healed. And we're told that at that very moment, the centurion's servant was healed. Jesus didn't even have to go to him. So here's what Matthew is getting at. Israel, God's grace has been given to you in a special way. But these Gentiles, this Canaanite woman, this centurion, are embodying more faith than you. So us Catholics, we're kind of like Israel. We've been around for a while. That we've had the revelation entrusted to us in a particular way. But beloved, it's easy for us to take grace for granted. It's easy for us to lose sight of what really, really matters. And so in this Mass today, the Church on the 20th Sunday of Ordinary Time says to us, faith is central. Grace is central. And as you build your lives in this way, as you allow for this root system to grow up within you, then you will be able to pray more attentively and effectively this evening's collect. And I want to pray part of the collect again. O God, who have prepared for those who love you good things which no eye can see. And that's the thing about grace. We can't see it so much. But God has prepared good things for us in heaven that our eyes cannot at this point see. Then it goes on to say, fill our hearts, we pray. Listen to this, with the warmth of your love. Beautiful. That's grace. Fill our hearts with your grace, which is the warmth of your love, so that loving you in all things, this is the work we do, right? Loving you in all things, and above all things, we may obtain your promises. So we would say as Catholics, And this would be a whole other homily. And don't worry, I'm not going to give you another homily. There is a dimension to karma that makes sense. But it can't be first. What has to be first is grace. Our hearts filled with the warmth of God's love. Lives rooted in grace. It is faith that knows God's mercy, that sees God's mercy in the work that we do. And we know that the fruit that we manifest is the fruit of grace. May we be inspired to live more intentionally the religion of grace, and with that woman, cry out to Jesus, "Lord, help me." And in turn, may we hear Jesus say to us, "Great is your faith. Let it be done for you as you wish."